the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. We're going to put a literal spotlight on the Southwest for this show, a solar spotlight. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and I thank you for listening and for being a part of Mrs. Green's world. And a shout out to the sponsor of this show and a valued partner of Mrs. Green's world, Tucson Electric Power. And you might think that is a strange pairing, Mrs. Green and a major utility, but if you take a look at the great strides that Tucson Electric Power has made when it comes to both renewable energy and energy efficiency, their progress is most impressive. TEP has a continually expanding portfolio of clean, renewable resources to help provide safe, reliable, and affordable electric service to our community every day. And as I've been reminded by them, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, there's no rest for the weary if you're in the power generating business, because we all want our electricity. Is that not the truth? So they're engaged in a myriad of research projects to raise their solar generating capacity to power the grid. Joining me in studio for these next 30 minutes to share with me a lot more information about some of those projects and how they're working to provide customers with something they want. I want, I'm a customer, sustainable energy at sustainable prices. And that's, I'm glad that's your job. So thank you. And please join me in welcoming Ted Burhans. He's the Director of Renewable Energy at TEP. Ted, it's great to have you here and
very
welcome.
Nice to be here.
And I know you know a lot because your team told me yesterday. So I just have to do this little shout out. I swore that I was going to do it. I went to a lunch and learn. It was Mrs. Green and Janos. Janos Wilder is a James Beard award-winning chef. And we do a lunch and learn, and it sold out in 22 minutes. I mean, it's a popular thing because we have fun. He's very popular. We do well together, and it's a great thing Tucson Medical Center is doing. We had a blast. So I sat at the TEP table because they were welcoming to me. I knew a lot of them. So I want to thank Patricia Duran, and she's going to crack up that I said her name on air, for helping me out with my kale consumption. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Everyone at that table will know exactly what I meant. And just so that you know, every one of them cleaned their plate empty. I felt like a mother. It was like, oh my God. And nobody left any dessert either, which kind of made me sad. So what a fun group. Now on to my many questions that I got that out of the way. Tell us about what is your scope of work. It's a big job.
It is a big job. So as the Director of Renewables, underneath my umbrella in my department, we have I have coordinators and folks who work on just the application processing of residential solar. So when you drive by your neighbor's house and they have solar, all of those applications and projects come in through my group, and then we route them to the various departments that need to know. So that's for residential customers.
And I would think that's very busy right now.
It's
lots of people
busy.
Are getting want to get their solar.
We had record number of applications and installations last year. Kind of dovetailing off of that, we have our non-residential side. So when you drive by a lot of the churches in Tucson, schools,
of the churches.
All of those projects
yes.
also come in through my group.
Sunnyside.
Yep. All of those projects are coming through my group and then are, again, routed to the various departments in the company. And then kind of splitting the other half of the department is our utility scale projects. So all of the solar and wind that we engage in or build ourselves, large solar farms, all of that procurement and kind of design of when are we going to do it, what are we going to do, where are we going to do it, that all, again, falls under my department. So I keep myself busy.
You keep yourself busy, and you really do have a great team. I wasn't just saying that. They're nice and they're fun, and you can tell they get along. There was a lot of
they're a very great team.
Kidding and all that stuff going on, and I was really happy to sit at their table instead of like with all the people I knew. You know what I mean? So they said, well, you want to sit with us? And I said, I absolutely positively do. So Paul Bonavia sat right in that chair where you are, and it couldn't have been, I'm trying to think, like maybe 7 years ago, I'm not sure, about then. And I remember we were talking about the percentage of renewables in terms of the overall delivery, and I think it was about 2%. I'm pretty sure it was about 2%. What is it today? What are the metrics there, and how much of the delivery is coming from renewables?
So in 2017, at the end of 2017, we actually produced a little over 12.5% of our overall energy needs for the year from renewable resources. The Arizona Corporation Commission, who regulates us as a utility, has a renewable mandate of 15% by the year 2025. So we're well on track to surpass that. TEP has an internal goal of 30% renewables by 2030.
That's what I thought.
So
30, a third.
Mm-hmm. So we've got quite a bit on the grid. Just to put, you know, that's the overall energy mix of the or energy production in an entire year. But on a great day like today, it's very easy that we'll have 25 to 30% of our overall power over the noon time period come from renewable resources.
Even in this freezing cold weather?
Yes, even in this.
It's snowing, and I'm like, snowing, snowing. You have to stop and think, because it has been gorgeous
yes.
here. 75 to 82. The nights are really cool. You know, you should. The Loop is like, it's like Grand Central Station. There's so many people out
on
the Loop, because let's do it before we want to stay in and hide and make sure our air conditioning is coming through.
Absolutely.
Because TEP is on it. Okay, so I talked to you a little bit before we got on air about getting my head around, so the University of Arizona Science and Park and Technology, is it Technology Park Solar Zone?
Yes, the Solar Zone.
It's even, like, I couldn't even get it out. It's like a world into itself. It's really impressive. It's vast. Can you just give us a brief overview of, it's many moving parts. It's companies. It's the university, it's you, the utility. So what is, get down in the weeds and tell
sure.
us about what's going on out there.
So the Solar Zone at the U of A Science and Technology Park was the Solar Zone specifically was a partnership between Tucson Electric Power and the university. And it was really born around 2009, 2010. Using the idea was to use a lot of the vacant desert space that the U of A has out there on the southeast side of town. And they said, hey, we're getting hit with a lot of developers want to come in and try to do something, but we think it'd be really neat to partner with a local utility who ultimately has to install renewables to meet the mandate. So we said, okay, that sounds like a great idea. So it's considered to be the largest multi-technology utility scale test facility in at least the Northern Hemisphere, if not the entire world. To put it kind of in context of things that we can physically see, feel, and touch, it's a little over 220 acres. There are seven different utility scale projects. They range from a megawatt and a half up to 7 megawatts. And we as a company, TEP, owns two of the systems. The other five are owned by independent companies. And then we're the sole off-taker of the power that's produced. We've used it both our company as well as the U of A has used it as a great showpiece of just saying, hey, this is basically the evolution of solar over the past 8 to 10 years or so. There are fixed tilt systems, which means that there's no moving parts, just panels facing basically south. We have single axis trackers, which move... they move in the same direction as the sun from east to west. And then we have dual axis trackers, which follow the sun north, south, east, west all day long. So for us, it's been a really great thing to kind of get the anecdotal information of how do these perform over time, but not have to do it at a scale where we've made $100 million investment and then it fails. So it's been a very great learning opportunity. And again, just an awesome showpiece for us.
And I know this, that there's a question here, but as I was doing the research, I kept thinking about, you have astronomers, right? I mean, they're the engineers, you have chemistry, you have science, physics, atmospheric science, all of these people, I don't mean astronomers in that context, okay? You have all of these scientists and researchers and professors and people that have expertise on your staff and private companies. How do you this is just a simple question. How do you share technology? Because I've been at some of the things that Research Corporation has put on where they bring science research from all over the world and they have agreements about, you know, intellectual capital and all that. But how do you, like, literally do it? Is it all data-driven or what, you know what I mean? Because there's a lot and a lot of people involved. Does that question make sense?
Yeah.
Like, how do you make the wheels on the bus go round and round and know what each spoke is doing?
So one of the great things about specifically about the solar zone is that, yes, we've been able to get a lot of data off of it. Just how does energy production compare to the time of day or time of year? But also it's a museum. I like to consider it a museum where you can actually go in, and if you give a presentation to a physicist or to a mechanical engineer, they can ask the questions that they're interested in. We can walk up to the panel and say, well, this is how this piece works. I just gave a tour there yesterday, and there was people who just do weather forecasting, and they'd never, specifically to solar plants, but they'd never been to a solar plant before. So it's that in-person knowledge sharing is a huge, huge thing.
And there's, to me, like part of the challenge becomes, what, like, I want to know, I have so many questions about what are you studying? And I mean, I would really like to go into what I think is one of the biggest challenges is storage, battery storage. And I remember taking a tour with TEP that does a tour. And we went all over. We went to Davis-Monthan. We went to the U of A. And we went to Roger Angel's operation with nanotechnology. So what do you... like, are you studying the different kinds of photovoltaics? What are you studying? Does that make sense? Like, are you studying the materials you use for it, the cells, nanotechnology? Is it all of it?
Amongst all of the partners, it is definitely all of it.
Okay.
From a utility perspective, it is really just to see how a solar plant performs at scale. Again, it's kind of that anecdotal, does this system break down in the sun or in a windstorm? Is there software issues that we constantly have to be maintaining? Things like that. Now, if you talk to the researchers, Dick Powell, who works at the, he's retired from the U of A, but he's now a senior fellow at the Tech Park. He's been working to take a lot of the data on the energy output and compare systems right next to each other and say how does one work versus the other. So there is the data-driven piece, and then you do have the vendors and who own some of the systems, and they're looking at it to see how do things work in Southern Arizona climates. Certainly, we have a lot of sunlight, but we also have a lot of heat, and so from a solar perspective, it can be a harsh environment, and so you've got to make the equipment appropriate for that.
It's a thing, right? That's the new expression, right? It's really a thing. I'm sorry, I'm doing that, but I do it a lot now. Like, it's really a thing to have it be too hot to where it has a negative impact. Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Solar is most efficient during basically under 95, 90 degrees or so. Once you start to get above that, you may have more sunlight, but you have less energy output. So the middle of the summers may seem great for solar, but actually they're not really that good.
For someone who majored in English literature, secondary education, and Shakespeare, you can imagine that the going down that rabbit hole of how this all works is really challenging the old brain here. So out there, there's research and development. That's a huge piece. Did they do any assembling and manufacturing?
No, we don't do any assembly or manufacturing other than in very, very small lab-type settings. And actually, none of that is driven by us. There has been manufacturing companies in Tucson. But
I know. I remember when Solon was here, and it was so exciting.
It was very exciting, but unfortunately,
And then prices fell.
Yes, there has been a lot of dropout over the past 8 years or so, just on who manufactures across the country. We haven't done any of that. Global Solar is still out there as a company, but they again, they're a smaller version of what they used to be.
Right, right. What about once a product is developed? What happens then? Like, for TEP's role, when there's a new product, since you're doing so much solar investment in solar and actually community solar and building solar fields, what happens when a new product comes to market? Like, oh yeah, we got to buy that.
So in typical utility sense, we're very conservative about what we make our investments in. Our investments have to, you know, we look on the 30 to 50 year time horizon versus just the 5 to 6 that other companies might. So we're very cautious as new technologies come out. But that's also why we have the partnership with the Tech Park. There's actually a new phase. I believe we're calling it phase 2, where we're going to be looking at some new technologies that might not be solar, but they could be storage or devices that help the grid. And so there's already a place for those out there. And so we'll be able to see those in a test setting, but a real world test setting. And then we'll be able to, you know, in 3 or 4 years, maybe make a decision off of that. But just like a lot of our other equipment that we have, we want to talk with the manufacturers. We want to see how it's produced.
You know, when you make an investment, it's a big investment.
Typically, yes.
Yeah, you're not going to put like a couple of few more rows out there. It's going to be
these
a
are
big
all,
purchasing. Yeah.
All of our, as we go forward to hit that 30% by 2030 goal, all of our solar and wind plants that we do will be very, very large.
Yeah.
Half a square mile to a square mile, if not larger.
You go out there and it's kind of beautiful to see if you're Mrs. Green. Like you go out there and you just see massive 220 or 30 acres is a lot. You just keep driving and driving and it's a beautiful thing if you're me. Does it provide any opportunities for training, like for people in the industry or for people at TEP? Is there a training component that works out there?
Not specifically. A lot of the vendors who do maintain the systems that we purchase the power from, they will have operations and maintenance crews.
So they can train their people. Right.
Absolutely. They can do that. Certainly, if there are folks that are interested in seeing how that see, feel, touch sort of aspect of it, we can take them out there. But there's no specific program tied to it.
What about, let's go into storage. Like, not knowing, like, not even a thimbleful. It's hard. It's for the layman, this is what I love about the show. You can help us understand why is there such a challenge with storage? My answer would be, if someone asked me on a panel, I'd say, well, because you're trying to store sunlight. That's what I would say.
Right.
It's like, how do you do that? How do you catch a moonbeam, right?
Right.
And pin it down. But is, with all of the people working on it, you've been there 9 years at TEP. What do you see in terms of advancement or continuing challenges? If we could store the sun, a lot of our CO2 emissions and our global warming would be greatly impacted.
Mm-hmm.
But there is still that barrier.
Absolutely. So you nailed it on the head. A utility providing electricity is the ultimate just-in-time company. We generate, transmit, and distribute electricity in the blink of an eye. We, up until just a few years ago, it's been very difficult to store the product, electricity. We could always store the fuel, coal, natural gas, etc. So with the advent of renewables, it is a must-take fuel. So when it produces, we have to take it because it's there. I liken storage right now to be at about the same maturity level as solar was in, say, 2010, 2011. But certainly that maturity curve is going to most likely accelerate faster than solar did. We benefit right now from a lot of the advances that car manufacturers are bringing to the table. Because they're spending the really, really big bucks for the innovation in lithium-ion batteries. And so we'll be able to move that into a utility-scale role. But one of the hard problems with storage also is that every battery can do a lot of things, but it can do maybe one or two things very, very well. And so if you don't identify the specific use case for it, you might just have a battery that's not going to do you any good. So it's we as a utility are trying to figure out how we can best harness that storage and that technology. And you'll be seeing a lot more of it coming onto the grid, but we're in that kind of infant stage right now.
Yeah, but even in the 10 years I've been doing this, there's been such an acceleration. It's pretty impressive. I mean, you get to see a lot.
Absolutely.
I'm interested too in the TEP is unique in that it produces and delivers. I mean, there's the whole thing. Some companies, they're responsible for the delivery, and then we produce it and we get it to you, to your door, and then you take it to the consumers. And TEP, it's the whole ball of wax. What do you do in terms of sharing with other big utility companies around the country and around the world? Is there data sharing and technology sharing in some intentional way in that arena too?
Absolutely. Actually, there were just two conferences here in Tucson this week that were bringing in experts from all over the country and world to talk about how do you deal with various issues that are caused by renewable resources. Utilities are, for the most part, we're not competitive because we all have our service territories and
it's regulated.
Right, at least in Arizona. So that's a great thing. We don't have to worry about hiding a lot of our information from others. So there is a lot of cross sharing. We work very well with APS and SRP. There's a lot of it going on. It's just figuring out who do you get it from and who's doing it the best.
Yeah, it's a lot. And that cross-pollination has to be really important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I remember the first one, it was my friend Jim Gentile was at Research Corporation, and he had me go out to Biosphere. And I mean, I sat there literally with my mouth open all day with what was being shared, and that was maybe 8 years ago. So, and things have changed so much. I was interested too yesterday, and I don't know, I know quite a few people at TEP because of our partnership, but What are the roles that your team has, like in your department? They're not just working, interfacing with the tech park. What is their responsibility when it comes to, the solar zone and solar in general?
So actually, the solar zone is really only interacted with a lot with my folks who are on the utility scale side of things.
Okay.
But I have folks who, again, they process the applications, they go out and they do the inspections if we need to work with an installer on a rooftop system. We have engineers who look at how a solar system, a smaller to mid-scale size solar system, will impact the distribution grid. So just, is it going to cause problems? Does there need to be upgrades? Things like that. So we have a lot of interactions and interactions with other departments, and we have a lot of expertise also in our own group.
And so when someone, like if I just came to you and I'm company X and I want to put X amounts of, megawatts for my building, do you help shepherd them through the process? Does your team do any of that? Like, it's a big deal.
Yes, absolutely. So if it's a customer of ours, we absolutely help shepherd them through. If it's a large scale developer who wants to come in with a solar farm proposal, we have to do a lot more, investigation and making sure that whatever they're doing and whatever we're buying from them is a prudent decision. Because everything we're doing is we're trying to do in the customer's best interest. We're always looking out for our ratepayers, keeping costs low, while at the same time also increasing our renewable portfolio and diversifying our portfolio more. All of that would be routed through my group.
It's like I said, did I say this already? It's a big job. What about, I think things like this, it's part of why I love being Mrs. Green, because I think a lot of people have either a quest for knowledge or they're curious about things like solar and how the whole grid works and the distribution. I mean, it does blow my mind. What do you do in terms of like public outreach and information? The tours are great. They're always full from what I know. And you go around and you see like Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, what they've done in terms of their solar advancement and how much they've put in. But what do you do? To know better is to do better, and there's so much to know about solar. What do you do in that arena?
That's actually a really timely question. We've just released three television commercials yesterday, kind of talking about different aspects of our solar deployment, renewable deployment.
And I did not watch TV yesterday because we know what happened last night.
It was on, actually.
We're not going to talk about it.
It aired during several of the March Madness games, so they'll be playing again throughout the week. But then also just recently at the beginning.
So what are the commercials about?
One of the coolest commercial is we have a large solar and wind farm out just west of Wilcox, and one of the problems that you have on a solar farm, especially if it's in a wetter area, is that you have a lot of vegetation that will just naturally grow. You'll have high grasses, things like that. So this commercial highlights the natural landscaping that we do but with flocks of sheep. So the sheep will just naturally graze. And
I want to go down there on a tour.
You don't use goats because goats will climb the panels, but the sheep will.
And
the
goats are
will
crazy.
All, yes, goats the goats will also eat
crazy.
The wires. So this is a commercial just showing sheep eating grass under the solar panels.
You are kidding. I would have noticed that if I had seen it. So that's good. That's one.
And then there's just looking at showcasing our large arrays, making sure that people who don't get an opportunity to go out on a solar zone tour get to see aerial footage, get to see what it looks like, myself standing next to a panel. So it's just trying to help highlight and have people understand that while you might not see it because it is located not or it isn't located on a neighbor's roof, we're out there, we're trying to do our best and deploy it at a cost effective manner.
Yeah, it's I can't wait to see the commercial with the sheep. That's ingenious.
And then the other big thing that we're trying to do is on our website, we just released at the beginning of this year a real-time solar production or output monitoring page, so you can take a look at most of our large-scale plants and see how they're actually performing right now. And it's also compared to how the overall grid is, what the load of the grid is, and showing you the percentage of overall power that's coming from those renewable systems.
So that's an online opportunity,
yep.
not an app yet.
I'm not sure if it's in our app, but I know that you can also see it from our website online or on your phone.
So what about, I remember when I first went on the tour and, no, it wasn't there, but at Habitat for Humanity's Habastore, they have solar and they have this computer-generated thing mm-hmm. up there that talks about how much of the generation of power is coming from the sun right now and how much, because that's a big building.
Yes. So that's all done through independent monitoring. It basically, there's when a developer comes out to a customer's residence or business, they have the opportunity to hook into a network that monitors their system and shows them sometimes in very archaic form or sometimes in very pretty nice graphics, just how they're producing during that day. And it does provide a great visual to help you realize that those solar panels, they are doing something.
So I have, let's just say I have this huge building in Tucson, Arizona, flat roof, thousands of square feet. Is there a downside to having solar on it? Like, why would anyone not do that when it can reduce your electric bill forever?
So
is that too simple? Oversimplified?
No. There still is a cost for that solar, even though
right.
It's yes, you do have to pay it. It's just paid to a different entity instead of the utility. There's not a specific downside to it. However, it can be more expensive in the end.
Expense, than, I mean, other than the obvious, and yeah, I should have said that. I mean, it is an expense.
So we try to take care of it. We try to deploy for the greater good of all of our customers, a more cost-effective solution, and we feel that that's the utility-scale projects. But certainly it's an option that customers have.
Right. Okay. So if you ask me, time flew. It was like, whoa. And I just want to say on March 27th, Zaman Neff, Director of Children's Rights Division, Human Rights Watch, our children protecting their rights and their lives. It was a rough show for me to do, and we're very lucky to be living here in the United States. Even though there are things that are bad, I'd rather be here than anywhere else. March 29th, Frank Bonias, Environmental Services Superintendent, City of Tucson, and Dean Bell, owner of Gerson's Building Materials, Buildings Eco Paint, the Green Paint Way. It's going to be a fun show because of what they're doing in a public-private partnership. Ted, this was awesome.
And
you helped improve my environmental IQ, and I'm smarter now than when I started the show. So thanks for being here, and thanks for all you do.
Absolutely. Thank you.